Hello, listener. What you're about to hear is a What Are We Da Show patron unlock. This is material which our Patreon supporters have early access to. If you'd like to experience these episodes when they're at their freshest, become a What Are We Da Show patron today at patreon.com/WARUIDESHOU.
Good evening, ladies, gentlemen, and MBs, and welcome to Warrior Death Show's second stream. It's our premium featurette here, you know. We're going to be covering Capuccio Sherlock Episode 5 today. And joining me as always, across the pond, close to my heart, is top lad, top draw, the Soul Doctor.
Cinco de Capuccio. That time of year, folks.
It is. And
margaritas and sake. And skeletons.
I could do
all around.
I could do with the first two of those. Skeletons, not so much. but yeah, I definitely go for some.
I like a skeleton. I like a plastic skeleton.
I like my skeleton. It stops me from turning into a pile of jelly. You know, from becoming a gelatinous mass. Like my skeleton's great.
Bones are good.
Yes, look after your bones, folks. That's our like you know PSA here. You know, we're getting sponsored by the milk companies of the United States and Canada.
And the television show Bones, though, I'm not a big fan.
I had an ex-girlfriend of mine way back when who was into that, and I actually bought her the DVD of the entire series, and then broke up with her a week and a half later for unrelated reasons.
Oh,
I never,
so no.
I kept hold of it, and I never got around to watching it myself, so it'll always be associated with that. But anyway. So, Capuccio Sherlock Episode 5. For those of you not familiar with our format here on Second Stream, because you may potentially be hearing this on its public domain for the first time, we don't do what we do in Stream of Thought, where we go into significant amount of plot details before summarizing points. It's all about the talking points. And I need to get two things out of the way first before we even begin here. Some things that are noteworthy. Now, I think it's fair to say that our discussions of Sherlock thus far have been more about issues and things that are surrounding it rather than anything that's actually really going on inside the show itself. Which is not to say that there hasn't been anything going on inside the show proper. This might very well just be of things that you and I have missed, Doc. Like, you know, we're not perfect, we're only human, and we could very well just be missing the obvious. Indeed.
Speak for yourself.
Well, you know, you've got me there. I mean, our wonderful colleague who unfortunately can't be with us today, Vorg Elliott, did point out that there is an element of performance in episode 3 in particular, and that seems to have actually come through on a couple of occasions, including the episode we'll be talking about today. For my money, it could be much more fleshed out than it currently is, but I think it's there. So that being said, though, as I say, a lot of what we talked about has been more things that have surrounded and orbited the show rather than necessarily being about things inside of it, although we have covered things such as the potential queer phobia elements in it, etc., etc. And I want to also mention something else. So back in episode 2, I compared this show to our, you know, favorite, you know, PTSD-inducing nightmare, Darling in the Franks.
Don't.
Yes, I
no.
did. No, come on. Look, Franks was bad. We all know this.
Do you remember, you've seen Kill Bill, correct?
Way back when.
Sure. So it's an older movie. But do you remember the song that begins with the like wee oo wee oo
vaguely?
We should, whenever you mention Franks, that should be dropped in to the podcast. It's just a siren.
Yeah. I think it's the point in which, you know, someone should just restrain me, or like, you know, like I should put something in a tip jar, like the Frank's jar.
Crying. It was so scarring, man. It was an experience.
Well, no. Gosh. Here's the thing, though, right? I'm not this time around, on this particular occasion, actually bringing Frank's up to remind everyone of how much it, you know, was basically a giant garbage fire that got wheeled into my room every week through the power of my PC. That's not why I'm here saying, because there were things about Frank's that I liked, believe it or not. Like, there were times, yeah. Like, I give credit where it's due, or at least I try to. I mean, certainly I love, you know, putting shows in, you know, the old, what are they called, the old stockades and all that, you know, putting them on the public display and mocking them for all they're worth, like the freak shows they are. But there are times when shows do surprise me and do show me, we can be better than the things that we've shown you before. And in Darling in the Franxx, the first time that really happened for me was episode 5. And that mm-hmm. sound you're hearing right now is the penny dropping in your head with where I'm going with this. Because, as I mentioned before, I compared Sherlock previously to Franxx for its ridiculous, you know, fish moment, which is a continuing motif of this show, apparently, now. I think some madman out there, someone who wants to just gaslight me into oblivion, has decided to make that a recurring thing. So whoever's responsible for that, thanks a bunch. You're going to be in no small part responsible for me gibbering like a baby when I'm 60 and, you know, going through dementia. Thanks a fucking Listen. Bunch for that.
You rule. I love the recurring fish. It's beautiful.
Mm. So, okay, that's why I'm bringing this up, because I actually quite liked episode 5 of Kabukicho Sherlock. I know, you could, like, you know, take your hands, put them under your chins, and just bring the jaw back up to join the other one, you know, close your gaping mouth, and the shock that you must feel that I'm actually saying that. But I did. And there's a lot to talk about in this episode that will be about the episode proper and certain things that I was quite impressed by. And I have to say, though, like, part of me, like, I just want to say ahead of time that, well, some of the stuff I'm going to talk about probably is going to feel a lot like confirmation bias on my part, because I had listed at the start of the show, and indeed as we go along, things I wanted to see brought to the fore, and some of that did happen. So take my opinions that I'm going to give and the things I'm going to talk about with a pinch of salt, as you are always wont to do, because my enthusiasm for them may very well be part of the bias I feel, like a compromise. Being compromised in a sense, because finally we're getting some actual good stuff, and it's kind of things I wanted to see. But yeah, I was legitimately impressed with this episode, and also I should stress that I like the episode, but I'm not going to pretend that the elements that are in this episode haven't been done better elsewhere, substantially better elsewhere for that matter. So it kind of feels to me like I have two kind of feelings about it, one of which is, as a episode in the show relative to the quality of the others, in which it's easily the best episode of Kabukicho Sherlock thus far, by a mile.
By a country mile.
Yeah. And then there are also my feelings towards it relative to similar storylines in other shows that I've seen, where for all that, like, you know, they are in the same ballpark, like same categories, like same ideas, same tropes, same motifs, etc., it still isn't as good as I've seen elsewhere. So kind of, you know, one of those weird things where you look at it on its own, it's good, but then you look in the wider world and you think, I have seen better, though. And I'm going to be bringing it up. I'm going to bring it up later, because I'm going to make a very unfair comparison at least once during this particular podcast.
Apparently 5 is the magic number, right?
Yeah.
I mean, what is it about 5th episode?
Well, obviously that shows. Well, obviously, that we're if it's on. Following the Franxx formula, that means episode 6 is going to be a complete clusterfuck.
Just be bad. I got another number for you, and that number is 180. Because, man, this episode, it's just a 180. Like, all the things that the show kind of was doing that bothered me, and wasn't doing that I felt should be doing. So much of that, I don't know. I felt like I was watching a different anime. Yeah. I mean, and we didn't get, like, you know, I should say, actually, to be totally clear, like, we didn't get, like, some follow-ups on the larger story. We did get a breadcrumb about Moriarty's sister, which is nice. But, like, all that aside, I mean, this was an incredibly fun episode. And, you know, the space between a very good anime and a great anime is quite small, but it's a hard gap to cross, right? But it's not a large one. You've got to do the little things well. You've got to be tight, and you've got to pay off breadcrumbs that you got to have the breadcrumbs and pay them off, right? But like, you know, the space from, oh boy, I really dread watching this every week to, wow, I really like this, and
well,
it's fun.
You know what's funny?
Like, that's huge.
You know what's funny though, Doc? Like, now that we have watched this episode and it was good, I'm actually of the dread mindset again, because now that they've actually proven they can do some good stuff with the characters and the world that they've created, if they don't repeat that again, then I'm just going to be all the more annoyed with it. Like, you've done it. Why can't you do it again? Come on, guys.
Well, and
put your fucking back into it.
Well, in some ways, I feel like this is not unrepeatable, but this is probably going to be in the minority of the episodes we get. It felt like a nice side story.
Mm.
Because you know they're going to bring the focus back to Sherlock, away from Lucy and Mary.
You know, is that kind of a damning statement, like the best episode of the show thus far was about one of the most minor characters and not about the main ones? Holy shit.
It was fun because it turned out to be a mystery, a Sherlock mystery. And for the majority of the episode, like the first half, maybe the first two thirds, I didn't think it was going to be. I thought we just have kind of a straightforward character piece, and that's really nice. And then it turned into a mystery in a really like organic way. And it wasn't like this huge grisly murder mystery. It wasn't like engrossing or all encompassing. It just kind of slotted neatly into the story they were telling about Lucy and Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And that was good. It was very refreshing.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to get a point of mine right out there now. I'm not going to lie. When we were first introduced to Lucy at the end of episode 2, my prediction for her presence in the show was going to be she's going to spend the entirety of her time scowling at or physically assaulting Watson because he's trying to, get into her sister's, finger, unmentionable, yes, shall we say. Like,
right,
because because that was the impression I got. And especially given, everyone was all, wait, that's a girl? Ah, wacky, kooky, blah, funny, blah, 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 blah.
And wasn't there, a title card or some kind of allusion to her being, it's a cis complex or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Which is clearly, I think, an overstatement, we can say.
Yeah. So that was my impression. I was literally thinking to myself, we're going to get nothing more than her being used for a repeated gag joke that I don't find funny even the first time round. I was very cynical about it. And then this...
Come on, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not. So hilarious. So, it almost made me stop mixing the bleach into my drink. So...
Oh, boy.
So, I was legitimately surprised to see this episode actually focus on Lucy outright. Like, it is her episode. It is,
Yeah.
And to a lesser extent, Mary, but it's mostly about Lucy. And I actually went and looked this up again. And I can confirm, at least again, according to Wikipedia, which, as we all know, is entirely reputable and not entirely at the mercy of, random people writing shit in for funsies.
No, just experts.
But from what I understand, Lucy did not exist in the original Sherlock canon, period. It was Mary and that was it. No family members beyond her father are mentioned in the Wikipedia article. And maybe that's false. Maybe Lucy did exist and is mentioned in passing. But if that's the case, then what I actually really appreciate Kabukicho Sherlock doing now is that it's either A, created something wholly original and done something interesting with it, or B, has fleshed out a character who was even less noteworthy than, her sister, who was whose most noteworthy accomplishment is being Holmes's wife. Like, it's done that, and it's done it really well. So kudos to them for doing that. Like, this is the kind of stuff that I want to see in adaptations more often, which is where they're willing to expand or flesh out or even add in new things that still mesh and gel with the existing material without getting out there too much. I mean, if you, for example, were to say, like, let's say that we, you know, through necromancy brought Conan Doyle back to life. Let's not do that, by the way. Let's just let the poor man rest. Also, don't practice necromancy casually, kids. You know, make sure you're properly licensed first.
And also, bring back David Foster Wallace before Arthur Conan Doyle, please.
Oh, boy. We could probably go on for hours about who we would, you know, whip out the old pentagrams for. But for the moment, I reckon if you asked Conan Doyle back in his heyday if he would be okay with Lucy, like, well, maybe not necessarily the show as presented, because I would imagine he would think to himself, what the Jiminy Jillikers is this stuff? But rather, I think that if you asked him about the concept of Mary having an older protective sister and that being the focus point of a story, especially given like what things were like back in England back in those days for young kids, I think he would probably have been okay with it. I think he would probably have approved of it. So, yeah, I will give credit where it's due. Well done, Kabukicho Sherlock. I've mispronounced that again, I know, but fuck it, who cares? For doing something original, which in itself is brave, given the material that we're dealing with here, but then actually doing something worthwhile of it and expanding it beyond what I personally thought was going to be the absolute limit of Lucy's involvement, which was, well, you know, punching Watson in the back of the head every time he made googly eyes.
I agree. Wholeheartedly agree. This is a really fun and interesting new wrinkle, new addition to the world of Sherlock Holmes, and I'm all for it. And like you, I'm glad that she's not like a one-note gag joke, that she has some personality and some character. I mean, is she kind of a stereotype? I mean, sure, right? You know, a very kind of like boyish in appearance, maybe tough girl, strong, admired by her more kind of feminine peers, looked up to, has a soft spot for her sister, all that stuff. Like, you talked about things you've seen before, you know, you've seen this movie before with her character in bullet points, but in execution, this episode, I really enjoyed her personality a lot. She's really easy to root for. She's extremely giving, you know, despite her kind of gruff exterior and her protective nature. She's very generous and very, it's just fun how she kind of, that generosity, like, continues to get her into trouble. That's a really fun thing. And again, like I said, makes her really easy to get behind as a character. And I'm into it. I thought she had really fun moments and also some really cool moments. I was glad that, you know, despite her sort of crush on the sumo wrestler and her fangirling, she got to kind of have a moment with him, like a check yourself moment. And then like as she was leaving, that when she says, you know, keep the 2 million yen, it's my goodbye present, and hey, stay on the straight and narrow, and she's like in the doorway with the sun coming in, she looks so freaking cool. That was such a great moment.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot to talk about here that I find really interesting, and I think this is again where I mentioned before about the idea of confirmation bias, because there were things that I wanted the show to do that I felt it could address just as a part of its world building, like, why is Kabukicho, you know, so dangerous? This is not, it's not been presented as such thus far, really.
Until now.
Until now, yeah. And why do we even have these private detectives exist in the first place? Like, how does this kind of, like, ecosystem come about? So, the first thing I want to point out is this. I really, really liked the opening, short as it was, as common and as done before as it is, because it ties into the idea of what Kabukicho is, in that it's both incredibly dangerous, but also it's a haven for those who are disadvantaged or otherwise, you know, thrown aside or tossed aside by the state. So Lucy and Mary's backstory is the one that you've heard a million times before. Loving family. Parents die or one of them leaves. You and I, for example, have seen this in, why can I not immediately remember this? Ancient Mage's Bride. Mm-hmm. It's been in Mawaru Penguin Drum. These are the unfair comparisons that I'm making here, because I will be blunt. It's not as well presented in those. But that being said, I will also be fair and say that as much as I enjoyed this episode about Lucy, I'm also remembering she's not the main character. This is a one-shot. And compacting all of that in the time that they did versus allowing it to unfold over the course of a season or two, as it did with those two shows I just mentioned, you know, it's not exactly a fair comparison to begin with, even beyond how good those two other shows are. But then, of course, Mary is taken away for adoption by the state. Don't really see much detail behind this, but we know that Lucy isn't coming with her. And, well, you don't need to know much more than that. It's not fair to separate, like, the last two surviving members of that family from each other for no reason. So Lucy, of course, takes Mary with her and they flee to Kabukicho. And not minutes after they arrive in Kabukicho, in a way that I initially found funny but then reflected on and realised this is probably how it could well work in the real world, they are preyed upon by gang members, criminals, I don't know who, just traffickers, you name it. And they almost...
One of them with like an oddly shaped head, the one with sunglasses. It's just a weird, it's like a pear-shaped head, it's bizarre.
Is that how you tell from a mile off that they're a criminal when they've got a weird shaped head? Beware, phrenology is the way forward to determine who's a criminal or not. If you've got a funny skull shape, you're definitely a criminal or a terrorist or a mobster or whatever, who knows? So that happens like almost immediately as soon as they arrive. And this for me does two things. First off, we've already like seen some idea of why, like, you know, Watson's fleeing from the state as well. But it backs it up now with a more personal state. Like Watson was fleeing just because of conspiracies and X-Files and tinfoil hat shit. I'm like, okay, fine. That's fine. But it's not as strong a connection as you advise might want the main character. Whereas Lucy, like, for no real good reason, her family is being torn apart, like, specifically her younger sister, the last family member she has in the world, apart from her dad, who is elsewhere. Like, that makes it personal. That makes it, strong. Like, you know, I can't, for example, imagine in her shoes, like, thinking, it's like tearing an arm off. So that works better. And
can I...
go on.
Oh, can I quickly, like... This is, I think, just... probably speculation on my part, or maybe there's something that you'll be able to hit me with and I'll be like, oh, I didn't notice that, so never mind. But what if there is a good reason for Mary being taken away? Like, for instance, you know, if they don't have parents to be with them, like, maybe the state believes, well, okay, there's no way that this young lady can be adequately cared for if she's like a minor still. That this, you know, just come of age person, or maybe Lucy's even still a minor at that point. I don't know, but for whatever reason, they're like, okay, you need to be separated so that people with money and a roof over their head and all that sort of stuff could take care of you, and you could be in a stable environment. And maybe that is the good reason. And so Lucy grabbing Mary and running away is this like incredibly selfish act on her part. And I mean, it's an act of love, but you know, love can be inherently selfish sometimes. And so maybe this is why, right? Like, she is so protective and like guards Mary and does everything for her to try to like pay back that selfishness, to try to be like, okay, like I took you away, so I have to now provide this good life for you no matter what, like at the cost of my own happiness and enjoyment. You are the person that has to benefit from this now.
You know, that could be a thing. We don't get really any info on the context, like, of...
We don't.
...of why Mary has to be separated from Lucy. Although, funnily enough, what you've just said ties into an idea that I have on how this may play out now that we've had Lucy's backstory established, in that, well, provided he gets a massive, massive personality transplant at some point and stops being, you know, as useless as I was, I described on Twitter as a Victoria's Secret chastity belt. Let's say Watson and Mary do hook up. Like, let's say it follows the canon. Now, maybe Lucy could develop from this and say, look, right, okay, I've protected and sheltered my sister for a long time. and she's found a guy. And maybe, you know, despite him, well, being a tit, he's not so bad. He's got a good heart. So maybe I should let her go, you know, like, I can only shelter her so long. That could be a point of character development, possibly. There's potential to be drawn from this. But for me, in terms of the episode itself, like, as I say, it makes the connection, like, it makes the state who we've seen thus far, like, you know, we've got a wall in Kabukicho because why not? And Watson's on the other end of the conspiracy. And, like, these are all fine and dandy, but now we have a very personal connection as to why people would want to go there and seek refuge in that place. And yet, simultaneously, we also now get to see that Kabukicho is indeed the dangerous place people have made it out to be, because without, like, seconds having passed from the moment they arrive there, they are preyed upon by criminals.
Finally.
Finally, they got what was coming to them. No, of course not. So, yeah, that all works. And that's done in the first minute and a half before the actual episode, like, starts up properly. And it,
if I was going to be churlish...
Oh, is that you being churlish as opposed to me? What a weird world we find ourselves in. Go on, lad.
So, if I was going to be churlish, right... Like, I could, I think, say, oh, you had, you know, two dudes who are unsavory types try to prey upon these, like, teen girls who are by themselves in the dead of night. Oh, no, Kabukicho, such a totally different and more dangerous environment than any other urban area. I mean, this seems pretty par for the course for, like, yeah, like, any city setting you could make this happen in. Like, it's still not, you know, there's still not that much differentiation. I feel like this could happen on the east side, right? Or am I crazy?
Well,
this is, like, a normal thing.
Well, I suppose we need to have more of the east side shown to us. West side. It's the west side, isn't it? Because that's what Watson refers to in the episode. We can't be getting east side and west side mixed up here, Doc. You know they get very offended. You know they get very offended, and I don't want them coming for me.
Please.
No, and maybe we need more comparison points, but I can kind of see it being a thing of a more lawless state where that's a thing, especially if you consider the nastier undertones of the fact that, you know, there's a lot of sex work going on in there. Sex work trafficking, etc., etc., etc. Thankfully, that fate doesn't befall either of them, so that's good. And indeed, like, for as much as the first impression they have of Kabukicho is, oh my god, these shitheads are predating on us, you know, like, they're coming for us. They are saved by, what was his name again? The sumo wrestler dude.
Oh gosh, what is his name? I can't think of the names. One is the one that starts with an O.
Yeah, we'll call
the
him...
The one that starts with a B is his little lackey.
Yeah, well, that's... I was going to say Benimaru then, but he's a King of Fighters character, so that's definitely not who I...
Definitely a different body.
Bonmaru, there we go. Bonmaru. I don't remember the other gentleman's name because I'm terrible with names, as we know, but you all know who I'm referring to. So, yeah, he saves him and gives the life lesson to Lucy that she holds on from that point, which is stay on the straight and narrow. So, yeah, good start to the episode. Does a lot more for the show than, like, the past episodes have done in actually... well, playing to its strengths and playing to the promise that, you know, this setting has.
Mm-hmm.
And so what follows from there is kind of like, you know, your standard elder sister looking after younger sister, trying to put him through college, all that kind of stuff, including Mary going to a cram school, which is going to cost something ridiculous like $18,000 per year if you do the exchange rate. Some nonsense like that.
Like for tea, right? For tea... like ceremonial, like stuff.
I have no idea, mate. It could very well
be
the
art of drinking tea and pouring tea.
Could be basket weaving for all I know. But at the end,
it is definitely to do with tea because that ties into like the very end of the episode.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, good start to the episode there. Do you have a points for Doc for the meantime? I have plenty more to talk about, but obviously I don't want to take up all the airtime on this.
No, I mean, you know, the whole, like, hey, Kabukicho's unsavory, like, it is good that we got it, and it's very cute that Lucy is a huge, maybe not even a big sumo fan, but, like, a fan of this guy who helped her out. I really like how it kind of came back around because, you know, in the beginning when we see the flashback, we don't see the Yokozuna, But we revisit it later after she's talked to him and we see it. And you're like, oh, okay. Now I get it. She really is just a fan of this guy. And I have to say, like, this is as good a time as any to shout her out because so far, and like, so, well, so far, this is the most kind of work she's gotten to do in the show. And who knows, right? Like, if we'll get more Lucy stuff. But Mariko Higasuichi, the voice actress, the seiyuu, I really love her work here as Lucy. I love the deep voice. Something almost sensual about it that I really...
Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
Hey, she does allow her... Like, the character also, like, does have those quieter moments, you know? Mm-hmm. Rather than being constantly all like... Like, constantly, constantly gruff, like, you know, constantly gruff, constantly, you know, projecting. Which indeed makes me wonder if that's part of her image, like, because it is a, you know, a lawless town of sorts. So...
Yeah, yeah. She does... a very minor role in Mob Psycho 100. I don't even remember Mother Kamuro as a character.
Me neither.
And she plays, you know, Child Orga in Mobile Suit Gundam Iron-Blooded Orphans. She's got a number of roles in Naruto. But, like, I didn't really know her from anything else. She's Keicho Nijimura from JoJo's Part 4. I don't know if that's a major character or not. I haven't seen JoJo's Part 4.
I don't remember offhand, and I probably should know that, but hey.
Nijimura, the older brother of Okuyasu.
Oh, Mr. Bad Company himself.
Yes, the bad on the collar, right? Yeah, that's him.
Also known as Worst Company, because JoJo's has a severe aversion to copyright infringement. Like, you can have all the stand powers in the world, but one thing you ain't fighting is the legal system. God damn it. Although I don't think anyone would really care. Come on, guys.
No. All right. No, but she's great here. She's really great.
Yeah, she does really well. I'm going to make a small point here, by the way. Like, previously, I had, like, ragged on Mary's character design, but there's something about women wearing coats without actually wearing the sleeves that I find incredibly appealing. That's got some real energy there.
Yeah.
Yeah, she looks great in this.
I'm with that.
So, yeah.
Totally.
So even that got improved in this episode.
The big glasses?
Yeah.
Great look for her.
Exactly. So... The next point I want to bring up is a restatement of something that I've said in other podcasts about other shows, but I think it's worth bringing up here because it is relevant to Sherlock as a character. So Sherlock often can feel like this kind of inscrutable mind wizard, like someone who is someone who just conjures their solutions out of thin air, and everyone just gasps and awes and, like, you know,
inscrutable mind wizard.
Yeah, everyone just gasps and goes, "Oh my god!" And like, we mortal men cannot match the power of this individual. And
what a genius!
Yeah, and that often happens, and sometimes that can work depending on what you're going for. But for me, especially if you're dealing with a show in which a lot of the other characters are also detectives, you run into that old problem. And this is a question that I'm sure I've asked you before, Doc, but I'm going to ask you it again. This is a like more of a meta thing. How do you make a character competent? When you're writing...
You have asked me this before.
Yeah.
Well, so... I think where you're going to end up is you have Lucy solve the mystery.
Well, no, I'm actually referring to Sherlock specifically here. How do you make Sherlock competent?
Well, you just call him Sherlock Holmes and everyone will assume he's competent.
That's true. That's true.
I'm not sure
well,
what you're...
Well, the idea I have is that there are two ways you do it when you're writing. You either literally make the character competent, which is show them, you know, using their skills and their talents that you write for them to solve problems. Not even necessarily mysteries, but just to overcome the challenges before them. And then there's the lazy hack writing way where rather than making the character look competent, you make the other characters look like idiots.
Oh, look bad.
Yes, yeah. You make them look bad. And that's a problem that you can run into when trying to write a character who is such a genius as Sherlock, because inevitably it demands that the writers try and be as smart as the main character. Not necessarily to the same degree, perhaps, but you have to, of course, envision it and then write backwards or write forwards in the mystery to make it work. And there's a moment in this episode that I really, really appreciate where I thought, by God, they actually have avoided that pitfall. So Sherlock is overhearing the conversation between Lucy, Mrs. Hudson, Bonmaru, and Jim, we'll call him, because I can't remember his name, in the bar, in which you know, they mentioned that the 2 million yen that Bonmaru was given by Lucy was stolen after he got piss drunk, and, you know, oh my god, I'm so sorry, we'll make it up to you, but, like, Lucy's, of course, A, it's fine, you know, don't worry about it, because she's, of course, still very, she admires, like, Jim, quote-unquote. People are screaming at us right now for not knowing his name.
key point, though, he did not get Bonmaru piss drunk.
No, I'm going to come to that. So Sherlock's listening to this, and he actually, of course, pieces together the entire mystery of what happened as it goes along, specifically relating to Lucy's cooking being terrible.
Yes, I mean, I should have seen it coming. I was not in, like, solve a mystery mode. I was very much, like, sitting back and enjoying the character
stuff. That's still perfectly fine in and of itself. So later, after Watson bumps into her and realizes that she is in severe debt to the mob, because of the fact that the mob boss actually comes and says hi to Watson in the streets, which we will be covering in a patron question later. Like, he says to Sherlock, well, Sherlock, you've got all the money here. Like, you know, why don't you sort it out? And Sherlock's like, no, you can go get it yourself because it's not been spent yet, because I know who stole it. And so this, of course, leads into Sherlock's Rakugo moment. Not maybe 20 seconds into the explanation, Lucy puts it together ahead of time and leaves to go sort it. Fucking love that.
Great.
I love that it didn't require, like, because it would have felt humiliating for her, it to be her episode, but then to have everything explained to her and have her go, duh. But no, she puts it together ahead of time of the audience, and it's only Watson who's getting the explanation. So we actually get intercuts of the Rakugo going on, but also then Lucy confronting Jim, or whatever his name is, over the fact that he stole the money. And of course, the very personal betrayal that he was the one who said, stay on the straight and narrow. Oh no, I'm as bent as a dog's back leg now. Funny how time can do that to people. But I'll be coming back to that in a bit. So yeah, that I really, really appreciate, because it also kind of helps ground Sherlock as well. He's very, very smart. He's probably the smartest one there, but there are people batting in the same league, so to speak. You know, they're not at the top of the table, perhaps, but they're in the same place. And it also helps establish her credentials as a detective in her own right. So good shit to the show for doing that. It would have been so easy. Yeah,
No, I was just going to say, like, we got... you know, you mentioned it establishes her as a detective, and that was so good. I mean, all she needed to hear, right, was the culprit hasn't spent the money yet. And that was, you know, everything clicked into place because she is so kind of personally involved in the lives of these guys, or maybe not personally involved, but, like, because she thinks about this guy so much. She had so much of that information that was all she needed to run. But also, like, we see at an earlier point in the episode, her solving a couple of other different mysteries, like doing some real PI kind of work, like taking pictures of a man and a woman being intimate, finding a lost cat, and then some other sort of, it descends there into, like, more kind of comical, like, okay, how did she get this job directing traffic from the detective agency? I don't know. But yeah, clearly, like, she is a good detective and can easily kind of bang out a bunch of, like, tiny cases and also solve this really big, like, case of this episode. I also loved it. And I love that Sherlock, like, this felt like such a solvable mystery for the viewer. And he put it together because of observations that we all could have made. It's not like,
well, indeed, there was,
you know,
even
I solved this mystery because I know about, like, the chemical makeup of this, like, compound. It's like super specialized knowledge or something like that.
Yeah. In fact, this is how tightly written this episode actually is. We get numerous, like, setups and reminders for Lucy's terrible cooking right from the very beginning. Then we get the reminder later when Mary's, like, you know, saying, like, you know, thank you so much. Like, and of course, Lucy says, I'll take care of all the housework, including the cooking. And that leads to the great moment, which is like, not on the pain of death will you cook for me, which was quite good. So set up payoff, like, it's actually being written as if it's with rules in mind and, like, script writing techniques. And my God, my brain is leaking because I thought the show was a piece of shit, but clearly I was wrong.
And, like, you know, some people out there are probably complaining like that they overdid it. But for me, the dumb viewer, they did it enough times to where it made me feel like, wow, okay, this was definitely within my grasp.
It was never too obvious, like, in terms of how it was spoken about, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless you wanted to take the route maybe that Lucy's cooking was so terrible that that's what knocks Bon Maru out. But thankfully, she wasn't making mystery food X for him, so it wasn't that. But I can see, like, an alternate version of this story written by, and I can't believe I'm saying this about the people who gave us the Sherlock, but here we are, lesser writers, where Lucy is just there, dumbfounded, gaping mouth, as Sherlock just lays it all out, and it just leaves her humiliated that she's been betrayed in such a way by her, like, by her idol, as opposed to how it actually happens, which is, I figured it out, and I'm going to confront him over it. But then I'm also going to stick to the very principles that he himself could not, because they're worth believing in.
Mm-hmm.
Some good shit here.
Yeah, and really good.
And I'm very surprised about it, but very, very grateful for it.
Totally.
Yeah. So, do you have another point to give, Doc? Because I've still got more to talk about. Oh, boy.
Well, I already talked about how cool Lucy looked in that scene that you just referenced. Mm. And she gives a stern talking to the sumo wrestler who she had idolized. And so, since I've already mentioned that, I will just say that when she's meeting, she and I think Miss Hudson are talking to Bon Maru in where Sherlock's overhearing. The beverage
yeah.
that she gives him was the coffee of silence.
Yeah.
What a great
coffee is not known for making people silent, though, to be quite honest.
Incredible. Like, is that one of those where, like, the caffeine is so strong it comes all the way back around?
Just leaves you speechless?
It's just like, you become so focused that you just lose the ability to speak.
You pass between dimensions.
Yeah. It'd be like if it was like, you know, here's our next iteration of 5-hour energy.
Oh,
5-hour energy colon the big sleep. Wait a minute.
That would be a coffee, that's for sure. Alright. So the next point I want to make is about the ending of the episode. So the reason that Jim, the sumo wrestler whose name I still can't remember, I apologize. The reason he did all this, the reason he stole the money, was he was using it to fix matches because he was getting old and he would have had to retire eventually. And if there's something I've learned from actually looking up sumo wrestling in advance of this, to try and glean some relevant info.
Doskoi.
Yeah. Your salary is based on your rank. So there is a very legitimate financial reason to want to stay at the rank you're at. So that's why he was doing it, not to remain, at the rank he was rather than being demoted, which was actually explicitly mentioned in the episode. Now, Sherlock itself as a show has thus far been very, like, Japan culture, like, coded. Like, a lot of it would depend on your knowledge of Japanese culture, like the various jokes, for example, about the bath last episode, like, why are you drinking the milk? Stuff that would be lost on people like you and I if we hadn't looked up or had been told by otherwise. So that's all well and good. The thing I really appreciate about this, though, is that I think this actually serves as kind of a warning that, you know, for all that Kabukicho does good things for people, like for people like Lucy and Mary, where it gives them a home where they would otherwise be denied it because they've gone off the grid, even good people like Jim the sumo wrestler, they can still fall prey. You know, they're not always going to necessarily be virtuous people for all their lives. Temptation to commit crime or, you know, do horrible things is always a present danger. And it can even happen to the people we admire as, like, you know, pillars of morality or people who do things like, you know, intervene on our behalf. And I think that's why Lucy, in the end, returns the money. Because as much as it's a going away present, part of me also thinks maybe she perceived it as being tainted because it was associated with this crime now. And she didn't want to necessarily have it back, you know, as a result, instead going into, which I should stress, by the way, while the episode, of course, ends on a comedic note, the understanding she has, if she doesn't pay the money back in time, she's going to have to work it off basically as a sex worker. That was my understanding.
It was hers as well, initially.
Yeah.
But it did not turn out to be the case, thankfully.
Yeah, thankfully, no. But, well, holy shit, what an incredible thing for someone to do for their sister. Like, that's... I mean, fucking hell. What a good character, yeah. Like, being spawned out of basically nowhere.
I know!
From, like, one-note joke to best character in the show by a landslide.
I know! Like, so kind of, how do I say? Like, her personal honor and dignity is, like, less important to her than other people's well-being. Like, she will be generous over proud. And it's one of those things that, like, it's sort of like, you know, the Beatitudes or whatever that Christ talks about, like, where paradoxically it makes her the most honorable person in the show. You know what I mean? Because she just doesn't think about her own honor at all. And she's so, like, self-sacrificing.
Yep.
She's so noble.
Yeah, absolutely. Even, you know, with the threat of what will happen so she doesn't pay it off, like, it's tainted money now, as far as she's concerned. So that to her was more important. So I really, really like, I really, really like that. And I wonder if that will come into play later, because bear in mind, we have Moriarty this episode very briefly. So I wonder if that will play a part in his character arc as well. And maybe he will succumb to temptation or evil, whereas Lucy has not. But yeah, like, there's so much good stuff. Like, it's a tightly written script. It's got genuine humor in it that isn't at the, like, expense of, like, you know, actual characters or relying on hack, like, you know, crap shit like, you know, queer phobia and all that.
Yeah.
It's well done. It's not exceptional by any means in any of the areas it tackles. And I have a genuine fear that, like, now that Lucy's had her moment in the spotlight, that will really be it. With the exception of, you know, her only being relevant as it pertains to Mary's own development as a character, which there are time and place for that, but I would like to see more of, like, Lucy's own growth from here on out. Like, we'll see. I don't really have much else to add. I'm just overall impressed with the episode, impressed that it, you know, turned things around so much. But now they've put the gauntlet down. They've thrown it down, like, what they're capable of doing with this show. And I still think that there are ways that this could have been expanded on further. For example, Sherlock, like the money element that we see in this episode, like, that probably is why Lucy and Mary are working as detectives. Not for the kicks of it so much, but because they, you know, it's a good source of income. I mean, if they're making however much, like, I can't remember what the ranks pertain to the amounts off the top of my head, but they were substantial for solving crimes and such.
Yeah.
Then to them, it puts them in a different category of Sherlock who's doing it just for the intellectual exercise. And so I thought to myself, I can see, like, this being expanded where, because Sherlock succeeds all the time, like, they're angry at him, not because of his success necessarily, but because they are financially dependent on this source of income versus the other jobs they could potentially do, such as sex work. So I thought maybe it could have been expanded to that a little bit rather than Sherlock's role being a bit peripheral. I mean, they kind of almost went there with Watson saying, lend the money, please, Sherlock, but they didn't go any further than that. And I suppose that's fine. You know, what we got was okay. And I don't imagine Lucy would have taken the money anyway.
Hmm.
But there is certainly room for expansion on this. Also, we now, of course, meet the mob boss of the area, who I'm sure will be a recurring character, especially since he knows Watson. Ooh, boy.
I know. Yeah. Yeah. So is this, now that we've ventured into this territory, should we introduce the patron question?
Sure. If you've got no more points to add, then we'll talk about...
Oh, no. I do have a couple things.
Yeah, bring them up.
Okay. All right. So I just thought of, while you were talking, man, does this episode, like, really make, I don't know, sort of turn us against Sherlock in some ways, if we weren't already? Because I'm trying to think about, like, the modern interpretations of Sherlock I've seen, and if there's certainly no other detectives, but, like, are there any really, really kind of giving, generous types? Maybe Watson and the Benedict Cumberbatch thing, but, like, that's some kind of presented as like they balance each other out and they it's funny because they help each other. But like Lucy and Watson don't, I mean, sorry, Lucy and Sherlock don't have that sort of dynamic. And you have Sherlock in this episode refusing to give money to her, even though he has a fucking truckload of money. Not that she would accept it. Like, she would not have accepted it at all. But, like, here we have, like we said, the super generous person, Lucy, and Sherlock being, again, just a total dick. And he's been written as a total dick this far. But,
I don't agree with that because he doesn't refuse and say, like, feck off or whatever. He does say, no, the money's literally there for you to go claim. And indeed,
before he said that, he said, get it back yourself. Or, like, earn it yourself.
Well, maybe you could make the counter-argument that he, although I don't know if this is necessarily true, because he's definitely not a people person, but can you imagine what it would have meant for Lucy if she wouldn't have had the opportunity to confront Jim the sumo wrestler herself before he got found out?
Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, maybe he's, like, just pushing her to get further involved with this case because of that. I don't know. I mean, that's probably true. It's just...
I think it gives too much credit to Sherlock being a people person when he very much isn't, though.
He just annoys me. He annoys me.
Yeah, I know.
But,
This is like what I said, though. When the best character is the one that was invented for the show and otherwise previously seemed like just a minor background character, it kind of damns by association the main characters who thus far have been unimpressive, shall we say?
Yeah. So I'm going to introduce a little bit of the pro wrestling talk into the vernacular of this podcast.
It is sumo, to be fair. You've got more reason to than not at this time.
So in wrestling, you have, of course, many times, I mean, sometimes this is not the case, but many times you have distinct good guys and bad guys. Mm-hmm. And in carny speak, wrestling parlance, refer to them as baby faces and heels. And the heel, the bad guy character, is meant to get reactions from the audience, like boos, that are, you know, shorthand, again, in wrestling speak, we say heat. It's meant to get heat. Mm-hmm. Meant to get a lot of boos from the crowd. And the heel has a hard job because there's a difference between kind of heat where the audience enjoys disliking a character. The audience wants to see them get beat up, or the audience likes to boo them. And then there's what's called go-away heat, where you just don't like a person, so you turn off your television. And this is the job heels have in wrestling of not veering into the go-away heat territory. Mm-hmm. And Sherlock has go-away heat with me. He's that annoying. I mean, I don't really have... He's not like, oh, he's a likable dick. He's just an asshole. Like,
yeah.
The Rakugo's fun. But, like, you know, he's, like, using sleeping drugs on Watson because it's fun. He's a dick to Watson. He won't give Lucy them. But, like, why do we like this person? Why do we care about this person?
Yep. Pretty much. I'm in agreement. I will make one observation about Sherlock that came more clear to me this episode than I probably should have spied previously. You'll note that there's a transition in the episode where we go away from the colourful Rakugo world to the real world, but he's still talking about the case. So I'm inferring from that that's his, yeah, like, inner projection, like, what he sees or where he wishes he was. So that's
the
kind
green
of a
robe.
Yeah. So that's a nice insight, I suppose, because we did, of course, learn previously that he wanted to be a Rakugo performer, but was ultimately denied for reasons. That's all we really have. So that's a nice way of getting that across visually by just having that cut where he continues the discussion, but we move between, like, you know, the colourful Rakugo world to the regular one. So that's okay.
Yeah, but I mean...
He's still a dick, though. He's still a colossal prick.
Look, if you can, separate your love for Sherlock Holmes, the franchise, and the character, you know, who you've seen Benedict Cumberbatch play, and you've seen, you know, Sherlock Hound or The Great Mouse Detective, or read in the books... And think about the Sherlock of Kabukicho Case File 221. Why do we like this character? If he was called Marty Holmes, why do we like this character?
We don't. It really is as simple as that. We don't. And that's the thing. Like, that's why I said before, I love this episode.
I think that's the
relative.
Yeah,
stillness.
That's. Yeah.
But because it's not about him. Like, he appears like very minimally in it.
Yes. And the defense of it will be, you know, oh, it's Sherlock Holmes. Like, but
no,
I feel like
that's a
piss-weak, you know,
defense. It doesn't
matter.
That's
like sort of crowbarring in all this other stuff that.
Just because it's been that,
you know,
way in other
like
works doesn't
count,
mean it needs,
you know,
to be here. Like, if he is going to be a dick, it has to serve a purpose. Why has he been a dick thus far in the show? Beats the fuck out of me. I ain't got a clue on that one. He's just being a dick because it's kooky and wacky and funny. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't
He's
give
a totally
shit.
Totally impersonal, like, jerk face. But, like, okay. We're talking about something different, something more pleasant. I was really happy that at the end, you know, it wasn't, like you said, the sex shop. It was the host club. I'm sure there's a lot of, like, sort of, there's a lot, like, a seedy underbelly to host clubs or whatever, like, that people could be like, well, let me to host clubs. But, like, the way it was presented here was like, oh, okay, she's not having to do anything that would rob her of her personal dignity anymore. She's, like, in this more safe, mostly harmless kind of setting. And it tied back into the beginning because we get to see Mary there all dressed up for the club. And Lucy says, like, oh, wait a minute. Is this why you wanted to take the tea course? So you could be part of this host club? And it's like a nice kind of circular. No, but I'm very positive that's what's happening.
Yeah. I think that for me, like, I don't mind the way the episode ended, but I think your mileage may vary on the fact that it's still, like, her at her expense that this is happening. Although I will credit them again, they set up the show ahead of time with the truck that drives down the road past Mrs. Hudson and Mary when they're looking at the dress shop. So again, they're doing the good work here, the good writing work of setting things up ahead of time. Keep doing that. Like, it's really basic, but how many shows have you and I watched where they don't do that? Even if it's inconsequential minor stuff, you still get points from me if you set up ahead of time. Keep doing it. Please. Please.
And, yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I guess the host clubs can be exploitative in a sense, but, like, really we just get to see Lucy kind of be uncomfortable because she's not the sort of person that is comfortable with attention and affection for being handsome or beautiful. And, you know, she has to dress up like a boy and be admired by everyone, which makes her uncomfortable. But I don't know. It was really just this kind of... It was just, I don't know, maybe this makes me bad, but it was really cute to see her, like, being so bashful about how attractive she is.
Hell, give Lucy credit for being bashful in other scenes in this episode as well. Like, we get to see different sides to her. She's not all, like I say, not all constantly, you know, on edge, ready to pounce, ready to fight, ready to throw down. There's shades to her, you know, it's like... Dare I say she's a three-dimensional character? I didn't think I'd be saying about anyone in this fucking show.
What?
But well, we are in unknown territory here, folks. We're off the we're off the map. We're where the monsters are, you know. Shit. Okay. Do you have anything else to add, Doc, or should we move on to our patron questions?
That's it.
Okay, we have two this time around. So I want to first give a shout out to our wonderful patrons for always being a supporter of us and making this stuff happen. And I want to thank them, you know, for having patience with us as we cover the show. Now we have something good to talk about. Hopefully it does some justice to it.
Long may it continue.
And I will come back to that in a bit. But this first one comes from old friend Blinkarji here. What did you guys make of the smaller character interactions this episode? For myself, I like them, and I'll tell you why. I don't think there was a single wasted line this episode. Even one of the other detective dudes, whose name I don't remember, he had one line where he said, like, that Jim the Wrestler was, like, boring because he was getting old. That still was relevant later. I don't think a single part of it ever, like, felt wasted.
A good point. That's a good point because, it's like he was going to do something not boring by, like, you know, cheating and... staying in the top division, but no, he just did what that guy expected. So, no, yeah, for sure. This was a very efficient episode in that regard.
The script was tight. It was pretty
tight. I loved the minor characters getting the spotlight here. That's what made it good.
What's taking the pipe cat to the vet in the pram? That was amusing. I like that.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Watson's own presence in this episode was just kind of air, but I really don't give a shit about him.
Do we consider Moriarty a minor character?
I'm going to say no, because the show has taken a lot of time to emphasize him. What is trying to get across that we should be noting about him is a different matter entirely. But as it stands right now, he is someone to pay attention to.
I don't know if you know this, but he has a sister.
Just
dropping that knowledge bomb on you.
Hey, you know what? Good callback, Sally. I like that Lucy mentioned that. There's not much that's revealed from it, mind you, but it is still pertinent information that makes it feel more personal. So
We at least got a different I think he's been the one to mention it in the past, but like it was slightly different actually this time when someone else mentioned it and he kind of like had to look away and be like, mm-hmm, yeah. Like, it was an interesting reaction, you know?
Hmm. Absolutely. So, for me, like, to answer your question, Linkaji, like, for all that this episode may not have much meaning in the long run, I mean, as I say, my concern is now that Lucy's involvement will only be relevant as it pertains to Mary and Watson and them getting together and, like, her learning to let go. That, to me, seems like the obvious thing they do next. Although I would like her to have more episodes of her own. Like, hell, make the show about her for all I care. She's the most interesting and likable character thus far, and it only took an episode to do it. And, like, it's amazing what can happen when, and I know this is going to shock you all, folks, so like, listen home, so you might want to take your heart medication. It's amazing what can happen when you actually try.
Wow.
I know, right? It's the kind of stuff that makes a man lose his hair, and thank God I've already lost all of mine. So, yeah, I think this, like, you could probably look at this script like on its own and just think to yourself that it's very well written. It's efficient. It's tight. It's, I say, the content doesn't hold a candle, really, to stuff of similar ilk like Mario Penguin Drum. Like, even in one episode of Mario Penguin Drum with, you know, the brothers and such, like, I still felt much more strongly about that than I did here. But I must again stress, I had no hopes for Lucy being anything other than a punchline. Literally, by the way.
And Lucy, yeah, and what she kind of is, you know, that character type, you know, I'm going to echo you and say it has been done better elsewhere. Like, the one I immediately thought of was Ray Asuka from, Dear Brother, Onisama A, the excellent, excellent melodramatic shoujo from the 90s. Everybody should watch that. If you haven't seen Onisama A, Dear Brother, I don't know why I can't think of the man's name who's the director. I'm going to look it up really quickly, but like, it's like one of my favorite directors of all time. I feel terrible, absolutely terrible that I can't think of the man's name. Osamu Dazaki. Gosh, what is the matter with me? But
it's a Thursday. We can forgive you.
Bringing up his work again. He also directed Space Adventure Cobra, the movie.
It all comes back to Cobra.
It comes back to Cobra. But no, like, she's sort of a similar, like, the outline of the character is similar. Of course, Ray is a very rich character with a ton of nuance, and there's drug abuse and all sorts of stuff. But, like, I think they've cut from that cloth when developing Lucy. But even still, like you say, when, you know, you bring something over or do something that's been done before, it can still be good. It was very pleasant and enjoyable, and Lucy is different to Ray. She's got her a different texture to her character.
Exactly. So, yeah, I still am happy with what we got here. I mean, heck, to have spun an original character, add it into the show, like Mythos like this, and have it work both on its own merits and also to complement the existing characters, like, I think it works great. To answer your question, Blink, good scripts. The interactions were all relevant to my memory. And
yeah.
I can only hope that they keep this standard up. It won't make the show exceptional. It won't put it in my, like, for example, top 5 or even top 10 of the year, because it still has all the shit that came before, of course. And, you know, it's still not going to compete necessarily with the best written shows that I have mentioned.
I'm sorry, I said the wrong character. It's Kaoru. It's not Rei. My bad. If just in case there's any Dear Brother fans that are like screaming and they're mad.
No, they're knocking on your house right now.
Kaoru Orihara is actually the more direct comp, I think. But anyway, same show. Enough Dear Brother talk. Let's get back to
patron questions. The last one we have is from Kate Rose. And Kate says, and this is one of my favorite kind of questions to answer because it allows me to engage my conspiracy theory tinfoil hat brain. Please pose a theory as to how an upstanding doctor comes to know a Yakuza boss, because that's a good point. How did Watson ever meet this guy? Like, I'm sure we'll find out. I'm going to put a guess out there. I'm going to say that Watson's got a dark secret. What is his dark secret, you might ask? Well, he's, you know, been scooping out bits and bobs and bodies in the morgue and selling them to this guy on the black market.
Okay. All right, I can go with you there. That's a very much like, oh, this is just a little thing one time, and then just one more time, and then it snowballs.
A kidney here, a thing there, you know. It's not the end of the world. No one's going to notice. They're dead anyway.
No one misses them. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know. As long as they don't start taking out their eyes or anything, so when it's open casket, it'll be fine. But yeah, that to me is my best guess on it, mainly because we haven't still got the full story of, like, I mean, I honestly thought Watson just found his way there by accident because it was just literally a hole in the wall. He wasn't, like, shown to be guided there or anything like that. But nonetheless, the fact that we do have a criminal fraternity being established in the show is a good thing, because I get the feeling this gentleman will be a recurring character.
I hope so.
Yeah, and it'll help flesh out the world, because again, like, why is Kabukicho dangerous? Why are there things that you need to be wary of? Obviously, there's Jack the Ripper, but the show thus far has shown minimal interest in actually making him relevant, which is still a problem. It's something they really should address and deal with, and hopefully it does. But like, we're starting to finally get the pieces points placed that really should have been pointed earlier.
I like that it is a Yakuza that had to get him to this side of the wall. So it kind of tells us like that there's not that freedom of movement things that you could assume, but it's good to be definitely told that like you have certain characters that can go back and forth to other sides of the wall, but they exist outside the bounds of the law, and that's where Watson had to go.
Yeah.
Whatever means to get from one side to the other.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. When all else fails, when you can't rely on the state or the people that you work with or, you know, are friends with, like, if you're pushed that far, where do you turn? And the answer is, of course, the criminals, you know, criminal society.
So, the underworld.
The underworld, as it were.
Vampires and lichens.
Oh, no.
And Kate Beckinsdale.
No, let's not bring that up again. God, is there going to be a scene of, like, Sherlock shooting a hole in the floor? Please, no. I don't want to see that. But anyway, thank you very much, Splinkarji and Kate, for posing your questions. In fact, actually, no. Before we get any further on that, I've been very rude. Doctor, you have a crazy theory on, like, how Holmes knows this Yakuza boss.
I mean, not especially crazy. I think, you know, the Yakuza boss will be not like a hardened criminal, not a killer, not like a big bad. I think.
Hey, I'll this be episode, you know what? I'll be fair to him. Actually, he didn't charge any interest on the money that he loaned.
Exactly.
I mean, loan sharks, like, you know, all right, let me calculate the amount of interest you're going to have to pay back on this. You're still going. Like, oh yeah, yeah. I've not added enough zeros yet. You know, it takes a while. I got to add all the zeros on. Like, you know, several million percent. I just want to lend £1,000. I don't want to have to pay back like 700,000. Well, tough shit.
Yeah, I think he's gonna be okay. Like, not a real bad guy, like you said. Like, he really like goes easy on Lucy, and he is clearly like cool with Watson, like just kind of a nice guy, like, or at least that's they're on like these really friendly terms that you sort of almost wouldn't expect.
Yeah. I think I get the impression from this gentleman, like, notwithstanding the jokey ending, that he's an ally of mm-hmm. people like Watson and Lucy, but that it comes with a lot of strings attached, and that they would, of course, you know, there would be quite significant consequences were they broken. I mean, there is a reason why, for example, when we see Lucy in the office, he's framed with two blokes with him, like, you know, his ensemble. Sure. So sure. We'll see.
This
we'll see
is
how,
like,
we'll see how it pans out. But the fact that we're getting this developed is welcome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that, I mean, it differs from anime to anime and how Yakuza are portrayed. And unfortunately, that can sometimes be because they are involved, shall we say, with studios or with financial sides of productions. So don't well, make them look too bad.
Well, now that you've mentioned that, I can bring this back around and say that explains everything that I know about Darling in the Franxx. It was all a Yakuza tax break.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Yes. So I think this is going to be one where they're, you know, portrayed as quite friendly, at least the boss. Like, probably a money launderer and had good reasons for doing it back in the day, but not like a stone-cold killer for no reason, not like a vengeance taker. So I think, you know, and maybe he's even been forced into this role because he's like, I believe in Kabukicho, and I believe people should have the right to cross from there to there, and so I'm going to go underground and start this organization. I mean, you never know. But, like, yeah, I feel like he's going to be one of the softer, a mob boss with a soft side. And that's kind of how he knows Watson. Like, maybe it's like, you know, if he's just sort of the person you look up, you know, if you need passage. Like he, you know, maybe he had, like, what? We don't even know his mystery, but he has some kind of crazy mystery to solve. And he's like, I need help. I need the best of the best. And it's like, well, the best of the best are on the other side of the wall. Oh, God. Well, then I need to get over there. I need to solve. And so that's probably how he hooked up with him, in my estimation. This is not a crazy theory. This is just me going from A to B in a very simple way.
What if Watson looked him up in the phone book?
That'd be incredible. Please let that have happened.
People smuggling. Hello there. Can I get your people smuggling package? I'm just after the singles edition, please. You know, don't need no family or anything like that. Needs to be real quick. Okay, that's expensive, but I reckon I can pay it. Do you accept PayPal? Or maybe yes. Bitcoin?
Venmo.
A bit of Ethereum. You know, I hear you accuse the folks down for that. Oh, you cad, you. Right, I'll see you tomorrow. Or maybe it's the guy from Breaking Bad who was also the vacuum cleaner salesman. Who knows?
Put me down for one spot in your trunk.
Do they give him a loyalty card so every time they get he gets passed back and forth between the wall, he gets a stab and the eighth one is free? One can hope. Anyway, ladies, gentlemen, MBs, that brings us to our end of our second stream, on Kabukicho Show Episode 5. A very surprising episode indeed. I'm going to close off, firstly, by thanking you all very much for taking time to listen. If you've enjoyed this podcast and want to catch up with it week on week as it comes out, as the show airs, please do consider becoming a patron with us. Plenty of wonderful benefits. You get access to our Discord. You get ongoing other casts that are going to be released on long-form audio essays, like, for example, on films like we recently did Tokyo Godfathers. Got other stuff in the works as well. We host game nights and all that stuff. You get to make requests of us to cover particular shows. There's all sorts of great stuff. We don't do loyalty cards, but maybe we will put one in at some point in the future. But yeah, definitely consider doing that. And if you are otherwise listening to this in public domain, when this is out on YouTube or SoundCloud, and you've enjoyed what I do but don't want to become a patron for whatever reason, I'm totally cool with that too. All I'd ask is that if you have the time and the inclination just to drop us a little like and a subscribe, you know, however you want to, on whatever service that you are listening to us on, it just helps our discoverability and we would really, really appreciate it. And of course, if you want to hit us up on Twitter to give us feedback or comments, you can do so at WarioriDesho. Before we go, I'm just going to make a forward-thinking statement about this show. Like with Franxx, I liked Franxx in parts. Like, there were certain episodes of it, particularly the one done by that one female director who I still owe 3 pints to, and that still remains my blood promise till the end of time. So I will, you know, do my best going forward with Kabukicho Sherlock to point out the things I like in it when they appear. You know, I know that some people come to this podcast to enjoy me losing my mind and, like, you know, completely going apeshit over various things. Like, and hey, you know what? I'm more than happy to provide that for you. But I don't want to become one of those critics who just does that for the outrage clicks. I want to try and, like, actually say something of substance every now and again, shocking as that might sound. So I will give it credit where it's due. But now that it has done this episode, which has been legitimately good on its own merits, it now has to meet that standard going forward. The gauntlet has been thrown down. You've got my attention, show. You've proven that you're not all about shitty jokes and weak humour and piss-weak scripts and forgetting what's important in your own world-building. You've proven you can be more than that. So it's time to, you know, you've thrown the right hook, throw the left and come out swinging for the rest of it. Please, don't make me roast you over an open fire like I did with Frank's. Don't fall to the same fate. For God's fucking sake. Whew. Oh boy. Oh dear.
Blew yourself out.
I know. So on that note, thank you again everyone for joining us. I hope you have a cracking evening or day wherever you might be in the world this time. And as we're often quite fond of saying on this podcast, you know, embrace you for everyone to the ends of the universe. All the best.
Good evening. Mm-hmm.